The Obama administration is letting the genie out of the bottle, and there will be no putting it back. The genie is Monsanto Corporation's Roundup Ready alfalfa gene. Monsanto tells us this gene will allow farmers to grow more crops. And hey, that ain't hay. But those of us who are curious about what's eating what, pause to ask, can organic meat and dairy foods survive Roundup Ready alfalfa?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 715th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in La Plata who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, the Obama administration is letting the genie out of the bottle with its approval of Monsanto's genetically engineered alfalfa. America's fourth biggest crop and a foundation of our land-based food chain, alfalfa is a legume that pollinates by the wind. And ladies and gentlemen, the wind blows Monsanto's gene everywhere. Soon, the nation's entire crop of alfalfa will likely carry Monsanto's gene. If this sounds too big to be true, look up and see how Monsanto's Roundup Ready gene has inserted itself into almost every living canola plant in the nation of Canada. So, for all intents and purposes, it's done. There will be no putting Monsanto's genie back into the bottle. Monsanto says its genetically engineered alfalfa will allow farmers to grow more crops, and no matter how you look at it, that ain't hay. But that being said, those of us who are interested in what's eating what would like to know. Is it safe to eat genetically engineered life forms? What will happen to the nation's alfalfa after it has been subsumed by Monsanto's gene? And can organic meat and dairy survive Monsanto's genetically engineered alfalfa? Well, here today to help us find an answer, we have one of my favorites, Mark Castle of the Cornucopia Institute. Are you there, Mark?
I am, Michael. Good morning.
Welcome back to the Food Chain. So pleased to have you.
Thank you.
We've been talking, you and I, over the years about the government and safe food programs and whatnot. And for those of you out there in radio land who don't know what Cornucopia is, I have come to know Mark as the safeguard of organic food. If there's somebody that's looking out for organic food, it's Mark Castle. And how did you come to about this profession anyway, Mark? What led you to be the chief watchdog for the word organic?
Well, luckily, Michael, I'm not the only one.
But you're one of the loudest.
We might be. I'm joined here at Cornucopia by over 4,000 members, and many of whom are organic farmers, and a great staff and board, and a lot of other NGOs that are on the same page fighting for the same thing. And my path here was somewhat of a circuitous route. I started as a agribusiness executive. I worked for a couple of the company's largest tractor and farm equipment manufacturers, International Harvester and J.I. Case, and always had a romantic notion that farming was fundamentally the most important occupation.
Well, it is.
And it is. But farming changed after World War II, and I'm not quite that old, but when I was coming of age, really in the 60s, there was a slow transition. And prior to 1950, virtually every farm in this country was an organic farm. And it was really only after the war that the synthetic neurotoxins that were being developed for chemical warfare, among other applications, became widespread. And they became widespread because the investors that owned these large agrochemical companies decided that there was a profit to be made. And there was quite the juggernaut in terms of education between American Farm Bureau Federation, between the extension services at the land-grant universities, that the modern way of farming was the better way.
So essentially what farmers did is they substituted their time for money. and then went out and bought chemicals and equipment and went from there, right?
Sure. The number of people that farmers feed has grown individually for each farmer,
right.
has grown exponentially. And it really depopulated rural America. Our economy is a lot worse off for it. And we really used technology instead of human energy and creativity to grow our food. And so the food is different today, too. And I'm just one casualty. I'm not the only farmer or former agribusiness person that would tell you that the reason they got into organics is either they got sick or someone in their family got sick. And I was quite ill. I was able to confer with, at the time, the nation's preeminent environmental allergist, who put me on some therapeutic drug treatments and changed my diet. One of the things he said is you should eat all organic food, because while you're recovering from likely pesticide poisoning, you can take the strain off your immune system. And I got better. And since then, have been very dedicated to the organic movement. And again, that story is not an aberration. There's plenty of farm families around that have been impacted by cancer or chronic disease that have made their own connections with it, with the model of farming they were engaged in, and decided to make a radical change.
It seems like to be a common theme. I've talked with many people who bring that same thing up. You know, Mark, when I say that you become a watchdog for the organic industry, I'm thinking about what has happened with organic agriculture and how those small organic dairies have become giant industrial firms where they have 10,000 cows in a milking barn, and they hire somebody to walk through the picture of a Montana field, you know, and then they call those cows organic. But it's not that way, and you're the one who's been standing up to this industrialization of organic and saying, wait a minute, you're going too far here.
Well, the reason this has been an economically successful movement is that consumers think that they're doing more than selfishly protecting their families when they buy organic food, which we know has a lower contaminant load. We know, based on scientific research, peer-reviewed research, we know has a higher level of nutrition, because the soil fertility is where all health starts, and that's based on scientific investigation. But people feel good about investing in organics because of the ancillary aspects of supporting a model of agriculture that protects the earth rather than exploits it, and treats animals with more respect in terms of the animal husbandry management aspects. And we feel comfortable with spending more for organic food, in part because we assume that economic justice for the people who are growing our food is built right into the price. And these factory farms, whether it's thousands of cows on a, quote, organic dairy, or maybe 80,000 birds in an organic chicken coop that never go outside, this is a real betrayal. We, along with the organic community, Cornucopia and other groups, and our farmer members, have made enough noise over the last few years that the USDA, and there was a pronounced shift when Obama came in, the USDA has now put into place a more aggressive enforcement mechanism, and I think we're going to see a lot of these factory dairies go away in quick succession here.
Well, speaking of the Obama administration, that leads us to a subject today, and the Obama administration has approved the use of Monsanto's Roundup Ready alfalfa. Now, alfalfa is kind of like the base of the land-based food chain. It's one of those things that animals eat a lot of, this is a real interesting situation. First, I'd like to ask you some questions with respect to this, because I'm sure that you've looked into these things and can help us out. Also with us, not with us here today, folks, is the Monsanto Corporation. We did ask them, and they were really nice when they told me to go fly a kite, but they weren't interested in participating in this conversation, so it's kind of one-sided. So, if you don't believe what Mark says, then that's fine, too, but let's listen to what he has to say. Is it safe to eat genetically engineered life forms?
Well, I think the answer to that, Michael, is we don't know.
There's been no studies?
Well, there have been some studies, and the ones that we've looked at have been disturbing, but there's been not too many studies. Most of them have been conducted by the biosciences companies themselves or under contract to them. And there have been very, very few, if any, studies on the impacts on human health. But the what we've learned from the studies that have been done on animals, on test animals, have been disturbing. I'll give you an example. There was a study, peer-reviewed study in the International Journal of Biological Sciences in 2009 on genetically engineered corn.
Okay, hold that. I have to take a break. If the folks want to learn what happened in that study, they're going to have to stay tuned. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Mark Castle from the Cornucopia Institute and you. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Can organic meat and dairy survive the Roundup Ready alfalfa? Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about the release approved by the Obama administration of Monsanto's Roundup Ready alfalfa. Alfalfa is a legume that is spreads its pollen, of course, by the wind. And as it is the nation's fourth largest crop, it's grown pretty much everywhere around the United States. So you know that wind is going to spread the pollen just about everywhere, and soon, most likely, all of the canola or the alfalfa crop will be included in this genetic engineered gene. It will be inserted into the entire gene pool of alfalfa, as it has been up in Canada. So we're asking some basic questions of this situation, and the first question we're asking is it safe to eat genetically engineered life forms? Mark Castle from the Cornucopia Institute is helping us out by telling us about some studies that have been done on this. Mark, you're talking about some studies funded by the industry, right?
Well, most of them, not all of them. But actually, let's back up just a second, Michael, before we get into some of the human health impacts or potential impacts, and just to say, what is this stuff? And I want to make just a really brief correction. These plants, the alfalfa plant, is insect-pollinated. Which is even more problematic than crops like corn, which do rely in part by the wind. And that's because these little critters just will not respect the fence line or the property line. And they fly, these pollinators can fly up to 5 miles away. Yeah. And because the widespread production of this crop, because of the widespread production, it's just a matter of time until we don't have any non-genetically modified alfalfa in this country.
So that's pretty much a consensus, isn't it?
Pretty much. We haven't seen, other than biotech people, and even those folks aren't willing to sign on for some kind of coexistence regulatory regime. But here's the real rub, Michael, and the real concern in terms of accelerating this contamination. Almost all of the alfalfa seed in North America, really almost all of it worldwide, is grown in a very small region in the Pacific Northwest of the United States and Southwest Canada. So if the seed stock itself is grown in a very compact geographic area and the seed stock becomes contaminated, it won't matter how isolated your field is where you're growing non-GMO or organic alfalfa, it's going to be GMO.
There it is.
So now what's the impact going to be? And we're talking again about human health. I started working, and I'm not a scientist, I'm a farm policy analyst, and I started looking at the impacts of these crops on farmers and the food supply back in the late 1980s and early 1990s when the first genetically engineered product was commercialized, and that was Monsanto's genetically engineered bovine growth hormone, or Posilac.
Right, right.
And what was just absolutely outrageous was the fact that although there was a lot of testing done on cattle, and we really revealed some covered-up material, scientific research had showed that the animals were getting sick, but what didn't happen was there was no human health testing. I mean none on this genetically engineered material, and none, forget about the milk, none on the meat from animals that were injected with this hormone. So what they relied on, and what the FDA let them get away with relying on, was not genetically engineered bovine growth hormone milk, but in synthesized, naturally occurring bovine growth hormone from the pituitary glands of the cows, fed to or administered to as a remedy for dwarfism in the 1950s. And so somehow they decided, because that wasn't biologically active and didn't survive the human digestive system, that somehow this genetically engineered variety, this novel gene, would be safe for human consumption. So we don't even know what the long-term implications are. And even the animal studies that have been done on maize and some of the other crops, genetically engineered crops, this is a little blip in time in terms of the human diet and eating these novel man-made genes or inserted genes from transgenics, the famous fish genes in the tomato. We really don't know after a few generations or even a full human generation what this how these materials will impact our long-term health.
So essentially we're left with the fact that we don't know, but we have people who tell us one thing or another. Who says that it's safe to eat genetically engineered life forms?
Well, trust the government, because the FDA says it's safe, and trust Monsanto or Syngenta and other biochemical companies. But see, I trust independent scientists, and some of whom I know. So let me give you an example. There was a study commissioned by the Australian Health Ministry in 2008, which clearly showed negative reproductive impacts from eating, an animal study, GM maize. And one of my friends and colleagues, Dr. Michael Hansen at the Consumers Union, that publishes Consumer Reports, at the time said, this study is very problematic because it found that mice fed GM corn, I'm quoting Michael, produced fewer litters, fewer total offspring, and more females with no offspring than mice. I'm sorry, fewer in comparison to the control group. There was a 20% decline overall in the offspring of the mice that were fed the genetically engineered corn. So there's something going on here. This is biologically active. There was another study that was done in the Journal of Food and Chemistry.
Well, of course it's biologically active, isn't it? I mean, if it's able to transmit itself from one plant to future generations, it has to be biologically active.
The reason I say it that way, Michael, is the claim is that this does not survive the human digestive system. But there's other studies that show that it is absorbed through the intestines and perineal immune response systems and in mice. So, again, we just don't know. There are too many question marks here.
Talk
about the genie in the bottle. Really, once we release these genes into the environment, we can't call them back.
There it is. Now, with respect to how the genetically engineered organisms were made through the FDA with no efficacy studies, who is Michael Taylor?
Well, Michael Taylor had a professional relationship with Monsanto when I was with the Farmers Union fighting BGH. He was one of the people who helped orchestrate its approval, and what they really fought like hell for against Michael was any labeling. In Europe, they really, in most countries, you have to label the food if it's made with genetically engineered material. They fought like hell because they know that if consumers were given a choice, we'd vote against this in the marketplace. Michael Taylor is now a high official in the U.S. in the FDA under the Obama administration. And
is there a connection between the release of GE alfalfa and Michael Taylor?
Well, we don't know. The regulatory body that had purview to review this was the USDA. And but we understand that the White House, and there have been press reports that David Axelrod, Obama's chief political architect, was personally involved in making sure this got approved and this happened. So what Taylor's involvement may or may not be would be open to conjecture, but obviously this administration has not backed one inch away from the Clinton and Bush years, where we had nothing but green lights for biotechnology.
Okay, well, we've got some phone callers already, and we'll pick them up after this break. Folks, we're talking about the release of genetically engineered alfalfa and the impact this release will have on the organic food chain of the United States and probably the world. Once the gene is released, once they start growing genetically engineered alfalfa that is designed to be able to withstand Roundup herbicide, that the gene will transmit itself to other plants and will thus be propagated throughout the world. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how this gene moves through the food chain. We're going to talk a little bit about the what happened with a canola up in Canada and see if there's any parallels with that. Percy Smyser and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479, 1080. Right back. Well, folks, the Obama administration is letting the genie out of the bottle, and there will be no putting it back. Now, when the genie, of course, is Monsanto Corporation's Roundup Ready alfalfa gene. You know, when Monsanto Corporation released its Roundup Ready canola into Canada, that gene was transmitted via the windblown pollen and essentially took over the entire country of Canada's canola crop. I don't know if there's any non-GMO canola left in the country of Canada. As a matter of fact, North Dakota farmer once said that I've given up on trying to grow organic canola because there just isn't any of it left.
Right, that was Fred Kirschman.
Fred Kirschman, yeah. And so I ask, is the same thing going to happen with alfalfa here in the United States? Is it going to take over like it did in Canada?
Well, it's certainly possible and take over in one form or another, because even without the cross-contamination, almost all of the corn and soybeans in this country are being intentionally planted as genetically modified crops. And here's the irony to this whole debate, Michael. This is a very, very temporary tool, very temporary technology, which may or may not be even benefiting farmers right now.
And
the reason I say temporary is that we predicted this before legalization of these products, 20 years ago, that because of their dependence on Roundup, which is Monsanto's trademarked name for the herbicide glyphosate, that because of the predominant use of this single chemical herbicide, just like antibiotic bacteria achieving resistance to antibiotics through successive generations, eventually the weeds themselves become immune to this toxic chemical. So we already have giant pigweed and other weeds that are taking over fields, and farmers are having to use a chemical cocktail of more and more different herbicides to be effective. And so it's really just a matter of time till these genes, which will still be in the environment, will become obsolete. Right now, they're already breeding six new generations of genetically engineered crops for dicamba and other herbicides. So we'll have more and more chemical use. Right now, here's the other irony. Almost no alfalfa growing in North America is treated with any herbicides right now. So they're trying to create a market.
Wait. Say that again.
almost no alfalfa grown in North America is treated with herbicides right now, under 20%, certainly. So they're creating a market to encourage people to apply more and more herbicides. And we've already seen research that suggests that there's an 8% what we call, quote, yield drag, that this particular kind of cultivar is going to produce, or once it's modified, 8% fewer pounds of alfalfa. So none of this makes any sense unless you're a shareholder at Monsanto and you can convince through your marketing prowess farmers to spend their hard-earned money on spending extra on seed.
So these seeds then will have not only the Roundup Ready gene, but it sounds like they're going to have successive layers of other modified genes to manage other kinds of herbicides and pesticides that we'll put on them. So it'll be kind of like this cocktail of altered genes, am I right?
Well, that's not instant, but that's what we have coming down the road imminently.
Wow. Well, let's take some phone calls while we're at it here.
Good.
Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Mark Castle, Cornucopia Institute out of Wisconsin. Is it warm out there yet, warming up?
It's a balmy 30 degrees today.
Hey, hot dog. Dave, you're on. Welcome aboard.
Hey, thank you very much, Michael. This is a great subject. Thanks for your guest. When I heard Monsanto, listen, that triggered off something in something I'm aware of Monsanto and what the Earth is also being subject to, and that is in the late, in around the 30s, I believe the late 20s, Monsanto created the PCB molecule, the polychlorinated biphenyl molecule. And it was such a wondrous molecule, they wanted to use it for insulating oils and electrical equipment, can still be found there, to road to a bonding agent in bubble gum.
Is that the famous PCBs?
The famous PCBs. We can now go anywhere on Earth, get a mammal from anywhere, a tissue sample off that mammal, and we will find the PCB molecule. And when we're talking your subject today, the hazard of the PCB molecule is it doesn't break down an acre. What is Monsanto doing now with this new genetically engineered product? Are we going to go through the same problem it getting into our biota and not breaking down and changing our genetic structure?
Well, that's a good question. So what happens to these genetically altered genes? Do they disappear somehow, or will they hang around forever?
Well, we don't really know because it's, again, too short term. I mean, obviously, and Dave's right, I mean, you could check the mother's milk and semen in mammals in Antarctica and find PCB and dioxin contamination. Monsanto is one of the companies that brought us Agent Orange. So it really is unknown. I mean, part of the concern is, do these genes reside in the soil? There's some evidence for that. We know that the Roundup, the glyphosate herbicide, changes the healthy molecular structure, the bacterial life in the soil. We end up with plants that aren't as healthy. And if we're talking about human nutrition, if we're eating some of these plants, or if our livestock are eating these plants, over the millennium, our ancestors knew, and in most religious practices, kosher practices, people are encouraged to not eat sick animals and plants. It's nature's way of kind of purging the gene pool of unhealthy products. So we really use antibiotics, widespread use in livestock, and many of these chemicals in farming to keep sick plants and animals alive. So it's really counterintuitive, and its long-term impacts are pretty much unknown.
Will there ever be any way of getting rid of these genes, or they're just there forever, aren't they?
Well, I've heard that especially in alfalfa, it's possible that in a 5 or 10 year period of time, if these were removed from the marketplace, we would eventually get rid of that. I mean, there's some areas, these crops and products move around quite a bit. In my neighborhood, and I live in an agrarian community, you can see hay bales transferred down the road all the time, and losing some of the hay and losing some of the seed. And not every hay field, because of weather conditions, ends up being mowed before the plant goes to seed, flowers, and then, again, these insects move great distances. So
Right. The
long-term impacts, again, are sadly unknown.
Dave, you got a quick follow-up before we go to the break?
Yes, I do. The example of the PCB molecule in Monsanto, that was not an organic thing. They wanted to use it, of course, for a lot of things.
Hey, hold on, Dave. We're going to pick you up after the break. You, Rich, are on. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain. Today we're talking with Mark Castle, the co-founder of the Cornucopia Institute in Wisconsin, watchdog of the organic industry and your food. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, folks, is it safe to eat genetically engineered life forms? Well, the Monsanto Corporation says it's safe, but others aren't quite so sure. Who do we believe? I don't know. Who do you think we should believe? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking on the phone with Dave. Also, Dave, welcome back. You have that follow-up question?
Yes. You know, we were talking about how, the PCB molecule being all over the planet. And that is for stuff that wasn't organic, right? Now we're talking about this genetically engineered strain for alfalfa, and that is in our food chain, to borrow from you, Michael. And then to know that insects will be one of the vectors for this. I mean, this thing is not going to take 70, 80 years to get around the globe. It's just going to happen amazingly quick. It won't be constrained, and that's one of my concerns.
Good. Thank you. We're going to take you off the air because we have a little trouble with your connection there. Well, can you comment on that, Mark?
Well, no, other than just agreeing with Dave that this is going to be a rapid distribution through the environment. And again, we don't know what the genetic impacts are going to be on other plants, on wild plants, on humans that will pass these traits along conceivably. So stay tuned. We're going to learn more. But by the way, I really want to emphasize that it's not all doom and gloom and doom. We are still fighting this. And we encourage you to go to the Cornucopia Institute website. It's cornucopia.org, CORNUCOPIA. Click on Action Alerts and send a message to the president. That's the one thing we can do proactively right now, that we don't accept this ruling. We'd like him to reconsider it. We will also be back in court at the Cornucopia Institute with our lawyers and partners, the Center for Food Safety. And we will be challenging the legality of this. We think we have some good basis to do that. This is going to impact the environment, impact the livelihoods of farmers. They needed to take this into consideration legally before they made this decision. We think their process was deficient, and we will be pursuing that aggressively.
And I suppose Monsanto will be fighting you too, right?
You bet. They've been involved in the court every inch of the way, but we made demand that they for the first time successful demand that they conduct an environmental impact study that went all the way to the Supreme Court with Cornucopia and others as a plaintiff, and we won there. So we think there's a good reasoning, and our lawyers again at the Center for Food Safety believe that we can prevail here. So the fight isn't over. And we need your listeners to stay with us on this.
Okay, Rich, you're up.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. I want to point out one thing. Whole Foods no longer can sell organic corn because they can't guarantee it. Anyway, we can talk about the GMOs. They may challenge our health, disrupt ecosystems, and compromise organic agriculture, and are developed more for corporate profit than sustainable production. But I'd like to maybe put this into a larger perspective. What we're really talking or doing here is introducing a completely novel synthetic genotype that creates a temporarily resistant oil-based chemical manufactured by one corporation. Now, what's going to happen in our post-petroleum world when there is no more oil or it's too expensive to extract. Roundup probably won't be around, either because it doesn't have the feedstock to make it anymore, or weeds will have developed a resistance to it, which you've already pointed out. But we're still stuck with an evolving synthetic plant genotype, and most biologists would say, yes, it's going to stay in the environment, it's going to mutate into what, who knows. But this is a classic example of our short-term solutions creating long-term problems. The real concern to me is that our government, regardless of whether it's progressive, liberal, or conservative, still doesn't understand the vital importance of researching, subsidizing, and supporting a more sustainable agriculture and food system in preparation for a post-petroleum world order, which by all accounts is only about 100 years away. Now, current farm policies are making this preparation for our future less and less likely. For me, this is the most basic of our challenges right now. And I'm really interested in the fact that Obama, on the one hand, supports the subsidies and the GMOs, while his wife is out there touting healthy food for kids' obesity. I wonder what their pillow talk is. That's my question.
Well, thanks, Bob.
Well,
great question. Mark?
I'm going to quote the New York Times writer, Miriam Burroughs, who referred to the USDA under the Obama administration as, quote, schizophrenic.
Really?
They've done a great job in turning around the mismanagement at the National Organic Program at the USDA, appointing some wonderful people who are respected universally by our community, and they're actually doing enforcement work for a change. But at the same time, we've got decisions like this genetically engineered alfalfa approval, and so hence schizophrenic. I don't know what the pillow talk is, but...
But it must be pretty interesting, right?
It must be interesting, and I don't know, you know, before we all were food crusaders and family farm crusaders and whatever our first issues are, the number one issue should be corporate control of our government and campaign finance reform. And the Citizens United decision in the Supreme Court was a giant step backwards for all of us who want pure food. It has an intimate relationship to all of our power to petition our government.
Hey, Rich, thanks. That's a great question. Really appreciate it. Bob's up next. And as can you be, we're at 800-624-2665, 831-479, 1080. I'd like to put this question on the table for Mark to consider before we go to the break, which is, who will own the alfalfa crop of the United States should Monsanto's Roundup Ready gene become inserted into the entire crop? Who will legally own that crop? That is the question on the table. Hold that when we get back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Mark Castle, Cornucopia Institute, there in beautiful Wisconsin. And you can join us today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, who will own the nation's alfalfa crop should Monsanto's Roundup Ready gene insert itself into the entire crop? Mark Castle, what do you think?
Well, right now you need a scorecard because it was developed by a company called Forage Genetics Incorporated. It's being distributed by the Land O'Lakes Cooperative, Farmer Cooperative.
Oh.
And
Land
Monsanto is the patent holder. So there's lots of partners. But in the case of Percy Schmeitzer in Canada, we know that if the technology, their genes, trespass onto your farm, and they can catch you in the act of harvesting something, even if you didn't plant it, that they contaminated it, they could take you to court and persecute you. So we've got something that's stronger now than our nation's governments, and that's the multinational corporation.
Bob, welcome to the Food Chain. You got talking with Mark Castle, Michael Olson. Go ahead.
Yeah, question for Mark. Well, as a consumer of organic alfalfa, I'm already looking for alternatives, alternative legumes and other hay sources. I learned also that we export quite a bit of alfalfa, and the bales are really packed tight, and they go back on those ships to China that brought over all the electronic goods and so on. What are the unintended consequences of it's making the alfalfa market smaller? I mean, there's going to be less people buying it, both here and overseas. So I guess that's it.
Yeah, Bob, it's a legitimate concern. Some of the other plaintiffs on the lawsuit that we're with are conventional seed and alfalfa producers. This will cut our exports to countries like Korea. It's not a large percentage of the alfalfa, but it is a market, and it's going to hurt farmers. So, again, this isn't a logical step, and we know of other farmers like you that are looking into clovers, other legumes, and other forage crops as an alternative if they can't get pure alfalfa seed or pure alfalfa in the future.
So that leads us to the logical question. Can the organic meat and dairy industry survive
In the short term, it will. It puts all the onus on us to make sure that there's not contamination. This would be like all the non-smokers having to police their air and make sure that no smoke gets into your own personal environment. We really do need to control these potential toxins, these potential genetic contaminants in our environment, and it starts at the source, not at the end users.
Linda, really quickly.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to be really quick.
Be really slow.
Institute of Responsible Technology, they put a... Are you familiar with them, David?
No, Mark.
Oh, Mark. I'm sorry. Mark.
Yes, I am.
Okay, yeah. I picked up some of their brochures. I ordered about 250 of them and started passing them out. I was amazed at how few people are even caring about this. But I just wanted to cite a couple of all these deaths that maybe... It says thousands of sheep, buffalo, and goats in India died after grazing on BT cotton plants after harvest. Farmers in Europe and Asia say that cows, water buffaloes, and chickens and horses died from eating BT corn.
Linda, you're going to have to end with that. But
can I come back after the break? I want to say one more thing about how the gene transfers into us.
Well, oh boy, that would be an interesting. You have to do it on the forums at metrofarm.com because we're off the air now. Thanks, hon, for calling. Mark Castle, thank you for joining us another time, and maybe there will be good news down the way.
Thank you, Michael,
for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.